Blog Talk Radio.
In the name of all citizens.
And the Atlanta Democrat told Ross Story, "We don't want Troy Davis killed in the name of all citizens of the state of Georgia. What I have called for today is an extension of that." He says, "For those employees, doctors, nurses who have been given or have taken on the job of killing Troy Davis, we're asking them to stay, not in our name. We're asking them to say, no, this is immoral, this is wrong, and we won't partake in it. We're asking them to take a stand for what is right and good." And for a short time on Tuesday, Senator Fort was the lone voice calling for a prison strike to save Davis's life, and reached by Ross Story, a spokesperson for Representative John Lewis, an icon of the civil rights movement, said the congressman would also be supportive of the action. It says, "If there are individuals who work with the Georgia prison system who feel their conscience is guiding them to not participate in this execution, Congressman Lewis, would support their right to follow the leading of their own convictions," the spokesperson wrote. At the heart of the civil rights movement was about was individuals standing up and saying no to injustice, Senator Fort added. "That's what Dr. King did at the Birmingham jail, saying we're not going to abide by an immoral law. I believe that what they're doing to Troy Davis, if they execute him, is unjust and immoral. Thus, as individuals, as moral human beings, we have to stand up and say no, not in our name." And Davis, 42, was convicted of murdering Georgia police officer Mark McFaul in 1989. Since his conviction, 7 of the 9 people who testified against him have recanted or changed their testimonies. "I am utterly shocked and disappointed at the failure of our justice system at all levels to correct the miscarriage of justice," Brian Kramer, an attorney for Davis, said, according to the decision. "No murder weapon was ever found. No DNA evidence or fingerprints tie Davis to the crime. And some witnesses have since said the murder was committed by another man, a witness who testified against Davis. And Davis is scheduled to be executed Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Protests at Atlanta, Washington, D.C., and other cities around the world are planning to coincide with the killing, although some activists have already begun demonstrating. So, I'm not sure if Davis is dead at this point. I don't know. I haven't seen anything yet. I don't know if he's going to stay for execution or not. But my heart goes out. The next article I wanted to read was, I hope I put this up here, but I can't. Yeah, here it is. This one is from the Financial Times today, and I thought it would be interesting to read this. It's not a very long article, but it kind of tells you the way things might be looking to the rest of the world. About the U.S. economy, and just take 1 second for it to come up here. Financial Times, but they're a pain in the ass to share anything with, because they got a million goddamn pop-ups doing this thing, and I really hate them. for that. Well, let's see if we can, yeah, see if we can find the, jerks. You wonder why the financial world is such a mess if this is the goddamn paper they have to read. Jesus. Then I don't have the article. They, here's something else that I wanted to read tonight, and it's called the Fed Launches the $400 Billion Operation Twist. And I don't know if anybody understands what the hell that is. I didn't. But I hopefully this paper will give me the news on it, not screw around with me here. All right. The U.S. Federal Reserve launched Operation Twist on Wednesday in a bold attempt to drive down long-term interest rates and reinvigorate the faltering economy. The central bank said that it would buy $400 billion of long-dated treasuries financed by the sale of an equal amount of bonds with 3 years or less to run. This program should put downward pressure on longer-term interest rates and help make broader financial conditions more accommodative, said the Fed. The policy is named after a similar attempt to twist the shape of the yield curve in the early 60s, the 1960s. The Fed also sprung a surprise by pledging to reinvest any early repayments from mortgage securities backed into debt issued by mortgage financiers such as Fannie Mae, with a strong focus on buying 30-year treasuries. We got a double twist, said Diane Swonk, a chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. Such a big move suggests that Ben Bernanke, Fed chairman, is alarmed by the slowdown and has decided to override opposition on the rate-setting Federal Open Market Committee and provide as much stimulus as easily practical. The purchases will run until June 2012. Operation Twist means that the Fed will increase the average maturity of its assets, but unlike its previous rounds of quantitative easing, the Fed will not expand the overall size of its balance sheet. Economists estimate that a twist of $400 billion could have a similar effect on interest rates to the $600 billion QE2 program of outright asset purchase that the Fed launched last November, which was a failure as well. Long-term interest rates fell after the move, with the yield on the 30-year Treasury bond dropping to 3% from 3.22%, and the S&P 500 index lost 2.9%, reflecting concerns about economic weakness. The FOMC voted for the decision by 7-3. The move to launch such a large twist, means the Fed has almost no scope to increase the size of the policy further. If it wants to ease monetary policy in future by buying more assets, it would probably have to increase the size of its balance sheet. The move follows the Fed's August statement that it was likely to keep interest rates exceptionally low until at least through mid-2013. It chose not to make further changes to its communication policy at this meeting, although that remains a subject of lively debate within the central bank. The decision reflects further weakness in data since its August meeting. And a most important change to its language on the economy, the Fed said there are significant downside risks to the economic outlook, including strains in global financial markets. So after he came out with this statement, it dropped the, I don't know if anybody checked, it dropped the Dow by about 250 points or so toward the end of the day and or more. And nobody's got any faith in this economy right now. And Ben Bernanke just doesn't have a clue what the hell he's doing, playing games with these twists and shouts. And, Anyway, so much for that. Now I wanted to go to, I got a couple more things. I got a little video, couple video audios for you tonight. A radio expert in Tokyo, radiation experts, Tokyo may have to be evacuated. Now this is, you haven't heard this in the news, have you? Of course not. But it's from Al Jazeera. And the news from Fukushima is so censor, my God. And in this country, the mainstream media, you can just forget about it. Just forget about it. So let me go to this. It's about 3 minutes long. And Tokyo may have to be evacuated.
In neighborhoods around Tokyo, volunteers for months now have been digging for answers, looking to uncover the truth as to how much radiation has made its way to the nation's capital. Investigative journalist Kota Kinoshita has been the focal point of the effort. He says the test results from soil samples analyzed in professional labs show dangerous hotspots throughout the city.
There are many areas with high levels of radioactive substances. The levels there are the same as in parts around Chernobyl, where people had to evacuate.
The need to evacuate parts of a sprawling capital of 35 million may have once seemed an incredible prospect. But some experts say the possibility can no longer be ignored. And mothers like Yayoi Inuma are just one of hundreds who believe their children are already suffering the effects. 10-year-old Hana has had severe joint pain in the arms and legs, deep rings under her eyes, and extreme tiredness to the point she sleeps for hours during the day. All symptoms of radiation sickness, say nuclear safety experts.
If it was just one thing, that would mean it was something else. But all the symptoms came at once. When we left Tokyo for a bit this summer, she got better right away.
The government's own team of researchers downplay the radiation risks, saying their findings show the biggest threat is public paranoia.
Regarding the level of radiation and its impact on human beings, there is not that much difference compared to before the disaster. The danger is psychological. People are stressed and anxious.
Experts around the world hold very different opinions as to how much radiation people can safely be exposed to. The Japanese government sets a maximum of 20 millisieverts a year, but new research suggests even a tiny amount ingested into the body can cause severe illness or cancer. Mika Noro spent the past 20 years in communities around Chernobyl. She's cared for children who fell ill with cancer or suffered growth defects. Most lived in areas where government scientists said radiation levels were not a threat.
I am bitterly frustrated and cannot forgive governments for their ignorance. We have seen firsthand how children suffered. We can't let the same thing happen in Japan.
What cannot be argued is that the young are the most vulnerable to radiation. In Tokyo, hundreds of expecting mothers are considering or have already chosen to leave. For Yayoi Inuma, a move is not at the moment financially possible. So for now, she keeps her daughter indoors and only buys food grown outside the affected areas, hoping it will give her child as normal and as healthy a life as possible. Okay. Steve Chow, Al Jazeera, Tokyo.
So, you know, they may have to evacuate Tokyo. There's one more nuclear video that I wanted to play. This is by Grit TV. Global Research Television, rather, and it talks about the nuclear accidents, okay, around the globe, okay, recently, and how dangerous things are becoming. So please stand and listen to this. I think it'll make your make you take some concern.
Thank you. This is James Corbett of Global Research TV with your Global Research feature report for grtv.ca. An explosion at the Marcoule nuclear site in France this week has once again focused world attention on the issue of nuclear safety. The blast, which took place in a furnace used to melt metallic waste from the plant, killed one worker and injured four, but France's nuclear safety authority was quick to stress that there had been no radiation leak as a result of the explosion. These assurances did little to assuage the fears of a public who are already on edge with concerns over the safety of nuclear power, however, and especially a French public who is wary of its own country's poor safety record and proneness to hiding information on safety concerns. The French nuclear industry is already reeling from an explosion at the Tricastin nuclear power plant in July, just days after the Nuclear Safety Authority identified 32 safety concerns at that plant. And news earlier this week that French company Areva was going to suspend its uranium conversion operations at two French plants due to a sharp drop in demand for nuclear fuel from Japan in the wake of the Fukushima disaster. Meanwhile, in the United States, the recent unusual 5.9 magnitude earthquake that struck near Washington, D.C., temporarily shut down the North Anna nuclear power plant, which was located just 20 miles from the quake's epicenter. The plant lost power and automatically reverted to backup systems. Despite initial official assurances that the incident was insignificant, as nuclear energy advisor Arnie Gunderson noted in a recent radio interview on WBAI, the failure of one of the emergency diesel generators at the plant is a worrying sign that the plant was tested to the limits of its design capabilities.
But in the last 6 months, we've had three times where the design bases have either been right at the hairy edge or over the edge. And remember, this is now a once-in-1,000 or once-in-10,000-year design basis because it's a nuclear plant. And the three are the tsunami at Fukushima. That was when it was designed, they thought it would be about a 9-meter or 27-foot high tidal wave, and the tsunami that hit was actually 45 feet high. So there's one case where clearly what we thought was a 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000 year phenomenon when the plant was built in 1970 was way below what Mother Nature could throw at us. The other one is here on the East Coast, is the earthquake at Surrey, and I'm sorry, at North Anna, and there, it didn't quite get to what we thought was the worst thing that nature could ever throw at us. But remember, this plant's only been running for 35 years, and we didn't anticipate this kind of earthquake for 5,000 years. So, again, we're right at that hairy edge. And the last one is the one we talked about last time I was on, which is Fort Calhoun. And no one expected a 107-foot-high flood within the lifetime of the plant. And here in 93 they had one, and now here in 2011 they've had one. So what we thought was the worst Mother Nature would throw at us in 5,000 years is in fact happening three times in the last 6 months.
Meanwhile in Japan, the Agriculture Ministry has announced that beef shipments from Fukushima Prefecture have resumed after 2 months of restrictions. The ban, which had also previously affected Iwate, Tochigi, and Miyagi prefectures, was imposed on fears that the cattle had been contaminated with radioactive cesium. The ministry stressed that all cattle from the region will be tested for radiation before being shipped, but failed to point out that under new temporary safe limits that the government had set in the wake of the disaster, Japan now has the highest legal limits for radiation in food in the world. The limit for radioactivity in food in Japan is now as much as 20 times the international legal limits for nuclear waste and hundreds of times those standards set for food in other countries. Amidst government obfuscation of the true nature of the problem at Fukushima, citizen action groups are still struggling to organize and to inform the public at large about their plight. Just this week, TEPCO infuriated Fukushima evacuees by releasing details of its compensation package for victims of the disaster. The 200-page document includes three forms that need to be filled out, including one that is 56 pages long and a 156-page explanatory booklet detailing the receipts and other records required for victims to get compensation. It's outrageous, Reiko Hachisuka, one of the evacuees seeking compensation for the incident, was quoted as saying by Bloomberg. Who would think of getting receipts when living in an evacuation shelter? As Eileen Miyoko Smith of Green Action Japan explained to Dr. Helen Caldicott on a recent edition of her radio program, If You Love This Planet, it is only through the painstaking efforts of independent citizen action groups that information about the true scale and scope of the Fukushima disaster is coming to light.
The population of Fukushima is approximately 2 million people, and of those, there are 385,000 children. What is significant is that the problems that have been surfacing, it's really citizen-led, that citizens have pushed for more investigation. For example, right after the accident, this is an example, I found out about, you know, being able to get 5 radiation monitors to Tokyo, and so through Nuclear Information and Resource Services in Washington, D.C., they were sent, and I facilitated that. I sent it to a group in Tokyo. We've been working on the Fukushima nuclear power plant issue for years and years, addressing the seismic problems there at the plant, meeting with Tokyo Electric, discussing how Tokyo Electric was manipulating the figures to show that that any potential earthquake at Fukushima would be small. Anyway, that group was called Fukuro no Kai. I made sure that the monitors got delivered. There are 5 monitors. And then what they did is they ran with it. They took it to Fukushima and gave it to citizens there. And instead of doing that kind of regular monitoring of leave the monitor in the same place and look at it once a day, et cetera, those parents took those monitors and went to the environment where their children were exposed, like the schools in Fukushima, and started getting radiation readings, and they were really, really high. And because of that, they took that to the prefecture and said, look, you have to survey all the schools in Fukushima, the school grounds, and find out what kind of levels there are. And as a result of that, where citizens pushed for surveying, all the schools in Fukushima prefecture got surveyed, 1,368 of them, and really high levels were found. The kind of levels were that 75% of the schools had radiation levels that exceed levels which trigger designation of a workplace as radiation controlled. That would mean that individuals under 18 are not legally permitted to enter.
What levels were they? Can you give us the levels?
They were high. In other words, that led to the Japanese provisional standard of no more than 3.8 microsieverts an hour. But the levels there were high, you know, more than 1.5 microsieverts in many areas.
Mm.
But some places in some ground areas of the playgrounds were really high. I mean, like, you know, not 3.8 microsieverts, but 40, 50, higher. That led to, okay, you know, there has to be some standards created. And then, unfortunately, then the Japanese government said they raised the standard from – the standard is 1 millisievert per year is the national standard. That's what's allowed for the general population. And they raised it 20 times to 20 millisieverts a year. For all of Fukushima, that's everybody, adults and children, even babies and pregnant women. And that's what we've been protesting, to try to get that standard changed back to a low standard.
For more on this story and other breaking news and current events, please go to globalresearch.ca. For more research and analysis by James Corbett, please go to CorbettReport.com.
Okay, and I thought that was fascinating because a whole lot of problems going on, but especially in Japan. And also stuff in the United States. I mean, this is just unbelievable. I don't know if anybody heard about the earthquake in India. Hasn't been too widely reported anywhere. But an earthquake measuring 6.9 on the Richter scale struck northern and eastern parts of India, claiming the lives of at least 9 people. At least 4 people were killed in Sikkim, India, while another 5 were killed in neighboring Nepal and dozens of others injured. The quake was felt at 6:15 local time in the northern state, Indian state of Sikkim. Darjeeling, Assam, Bengal, I can't read these names, Jharkhand. Sikkim is located near the border between India and Nepal. So just so you know, there is one there. There was something that came up here just now, and I wanted to read it quickly regarding Troy Davis. Troy Davis, the condemned inmate who convinced hundreds of thousands of people, but not the justice system, of his innocence, filed an 11th-hour plea Wednesday asking for U.S. Supreme Court to stop Georgia authorities from executing him for the murder of an off-duty police officer. The execution had been set at 7 p.m., but as the hour arrived, Georgia prison officials were still waiting for the high court's decision. They haven't received it. Though Davis's attorneys say 7 of 9 key witnesses against him have disputed all of or part of their testimony, state and federal judges have repeatedly ruled against granting him a new trial. And as the court losses piled up Wednesday, his offer to take a polygraph test was rejected, and the pardons board refused to give him one more hearing. Davis supporters staged vigils in the U.S. and Europe declaring, "I am Troy Davis" on signs, T-shirts, and the Internet. And some tried increasingly frenzied measures, urging prison workers to stay home, which is one I read, and even posting a judge's phone number online, hoping people will press him to put a stop to the 7 p.m. lethal injection. And President Barack Obama deflected calls from him to get involved. And they say death row. We say hell no. Hundreds of protesters chanted outside the Jackson prison where Davis was to be executed. And a few dozen riot police stood watch. About 10 counter-demonstrators, of course, were there and hoping for the death penalty. At a Paris rally, many of the roughly 150 demonstrators carried signs emblazoned with Davis' face. And everyone who looks a little bit at the case knows that there is too much doubt to execute him. That was from stated by Amnesty International. And Davis' execution has been stopped 3 times since 2007. But on Wednesday, the 42-year-old appeared to be out of legal options. As his last hours ticked away, an upbeat and prayerful Davis turned down an offer for special last meal as he met with friends and family. And supporters. And Troy Davis has impacted the world, his sister Martina Correa said in a news conference. They say, I am Troy Davis, in language he can speak. Can't speak languages. He can't speak, rather. But Correa, who is battling breast cancer and using a wheelchair as she helps coordinate rallies and other events, calls on people to push for change in the justice system. Then she said, "I'm going to stand here for my brother." And she got up with help from people around her. And that's what's happened. And as far as I can tell, they're still waiting for some kind of a. They held up the decision. So we'll see what happens there. But in the meantime, I have one more article that I thought was a health article here that was amazing to me, since I enjoy these, I kind of enjoy these products. I know I shouldn't, and I know they're probably bad for you, but... They are pretty good. And it turns out that these are foods that can trigger a stroke. Okay? 5 foods that can trigger a stroke. This kind of knocked me out when I first read it. few things feel more terrifying and random than a stroke, which can strike without warning in fear of, and fear of stroke when a blood vessel in or leading to the brain bursts or is blocked by a blood clot. Starving brain cells of oxygen and nutrient is well-founded. After all, stroke is the number three killer in the U.S., affecting more than 700,000 people each year. And here are the five foods that cause a damage that leads to stroke. Whoa. Crackers, chips, and store-bought pastries and baked goods. Wow. Muffins, donuts, chips, crackers, and many other baked goods are high in trans fats, which are hydrogenated oils popular with commercial bakeries because they stay solid at room temperature. So the products don't require refrigeration. Also listed on labels as partially hydrogenated or hydrogenated oils, trans fats are found in all kinds of snack foods, frozen foods, and baked goods, including salad dressings, microwave popcorn, stuffing mixes, frozen tater tots and french fries, cake mixes, and whipped toppings. They're also what makes margarine stay in a solid cube. And the worst offenders are fried fast foods such as onion rings, french fries, and fried chicken. Huh. Why it's bad? For years, scientists have known trans fats are dangerous artery blockers, upping the concentration of lipids and bad cholesterol in the blood and lowering good cholesterol. Now we can add stroke to the list of dangers. This year, researchers at the University of North Carolina found that women who ate 7 grams of trans fat each day, about the amount of 2 donuts or half a serving of french fries, had 30% more strokes. The ischemic type caused by blocked blood flow to the brain than women who ate just 1 gram a day. Another recent study, also in women, found that trans fats promoted inflammation and high levels of C-reactive protein, which have been linked to increased risks of diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. What to do? Aim to limit trans fats to no more than 1 to 2 grams a day, and preferably none. Avoid fast food, french fries, and other fried menu items, and study packaged foods, food labels closely. Ever better, bake your own cookies, cakes, and other snacks. When you can't search out health food alternative snacks, such as Terra brand potato chips and traditional whole grain crackers, such as those made by Finn, Wasa, Acmac, Revita, and Lavash. All right, and then number 2, smoked and processed meats. That's one of my hazards because I love those. Salami and so on. Whether your weakness is pastrami, sausage, hot dogs, bacon, or a smoked turkey sandwich, the word for the expert is watch out. Why it's bad. Smoked and processed meats are nasty contributors to stroke risk in 2 ways. The preserving process leaves them packed with sodium. But even worse are the preservatives used to keep processed meats from going bad, right? As sodium nitrate. And nitrate have been shown by researchers to direct damage blood vessels, causing arteries to harden and narrow. And, of course, damaged overly narrow blood vessels are exactly what you don't want if you fear stroke. So knock off all the processed meats. And many studies have linked processed meats to coronary artery disease. One meta-analysis in the journal Circulation circulated a 42% increase in coronary heart disease. For those who eat 1 serving of processed meat a day, stroke is not the only concern for salami fans. Cancer journals have reported numerous studies in the past 3 years showing that consumption of cured and smoked meats is linked with increased risk of diabetes and higher incidences of numerous types of cancer, including leukemia. So for all you pastrami, salami, turkey, everything fans, don't do it. I got to stop myself, so stop with me. No more salami. the hard salami. What to do? If a smoked turkey or ham sandwich is your lunch of choice, try to vary your diet, switching to tuna, peanut butter, or other choices several days a week. Or cook turkey and chicken yourself and slice it thin for sandwiches. But that's how you do it. But stay away from the delis. Of course, diet soda. Most people know to stay away from those things, but a lot of people are addicted to it. I can't stand this stuff personally. But although replacing sugary drinks with diet soda seems like a smart solution for keeping weight down, a heart-healthy goal, it turns out diet soda is likely a major bad guy when it comes to a stroke. Why it's bad? People who drink a diet soda a day may up their stroke risk by 48%. A Columbia University study presented at the American Stroke Association 2011 International Stroke Conference followed 2,500 people ages 40 and older and found that daily diet soda drinkers had 60% more strokes and coronary and heart attacks. And coronary artery disease than those who didn't drink diet soda. And researchers don't know exactly how diet soda ups stroke risk and are following up with further studies, but nutritionists are cautioning anyone concerned about stroke to cut out diet soda pop. What to do? Substitute more water for soda in your daily diet. It's the healthiest thirst quencher by far. Researchers say if you don't like water, try lemonade, iced tea, or juice. Just don't make it sugar-free, you know. yeah. You know, don't use anything with aspartame. Oh, man. This article really killed me because some of the stuff I really enjoy. Red meat. This winter, when the respected journal Stroke published a study showing that women who consumed a large portion of red meat each day had a 42% higher incidence of stroke, it got nutrition experts talking. The information that red meat and its high saturated fat content isn't healthy for those looking to prevent heart disease and stroke wasn't exactly news, but the percentage increase, almost 50%, was both startling and solid. The researchers arrived at their finding after following 3,500 Swedish women for 10 years. Why it's bad? Researchers have long known that the saturated fat in red meat raises the risk of stroke and heart disease by gradually clogging arteries with a buildup of protein plaques. Now it turns out that hemoglobin, the ingredient that gives red meat its high iron content, may pose a specific danger when it comes to stroke. Researchers are investigating whether blood becomes thicker and more viscous, as a result of the consumption of so-called hemiron, and specifically upping the chances of stroke. And it says what to do. Aim to substitute more poultry, okay, particularly white meat and fish, which are low in hemiron for red meat. Also, choose the heart-healthy source of protein whenever you can, especially beans, legumes, nuts, tofu, and non-fat dairy. And finally, canned soups and prepared foods. Whether it's canned soup, canned spaghetti, or healthy-sounding frozen dinners, prepared foods and mixes rely on sodium to increase flavor and make processed foods taste better. While canned soup is cited by nutritionists as the worst offender, one can of canned chicken noodle soup contains more than 1,100 milligrams of sodium, while many other varieties, from clam chowder to simple tomato, have between 450 and 800 milligrams per serving. And compare that to the American Heart and Stroke Association recommendation of less than 1,500 milligrams of sodium daily, and you'll see the problem. In fact, a nutritionist-led campaign, the National Salt Reduction Initiative calls for food companies to reduce the salt content in canned soups and other products by 20% over the next 2 years. Why it's bad? Salt, or sodium, as it's called on food labels, directly affects stroke risk. In one recent study, people who consume more than 4,000 milligrams of sodium daily had more than double the risk of stroke compared to those who ate 2,000 milligrams or less. Yet the Center for Disease Control estimates that most Americans eat close to 3,500 milligrams of sodium per day. And studies show that sodium raises blood pressure, the primary causative factor for stroke. And be warned that sodium wears many tricky disguises, which allow it to hide in all sorts of foods that we don't necessarily think of as salty. Some common safe-sounding ingredients that really mean salt are baking soda, baking powder, MSG, monosodium glutamate, disodium phosphate, sodium alginate. And it says what to do. Make your own homemade soups and entrees. Then freeze individual serving size portions and buy low sodium varieties. But read labels carefully, since not all products marked low sodium live up to that promise. And those are the five foods for stroke. I mean, a couple of those I really like, smoked meats and stuff like that. I've always enjoyed, but I didn't realize how bad they were. I guess I did, but you kind of, you do things that you don't want to do because you enjoy them. So don't do them anymore. Especially diet sodas, man. Stay away from that stuff. It's just bad news for you. Really, really bad news. I've got another short video here. Kind of shows how how the media, this particular one talks about the BBC, but we know that not only is it the BBC, it's NBC, CBS, ABC, MSNBC, all of these damn media companies, they're all part of the Bilderberg groups, part of the, part of the big deal. And let's see if I can find that. It's a short video, but it's kind of a member of parliament that, hang on a second, about a minute long. I'd like you to listen to it. It's media collusion with Bilderberg Group confirms hidden agenda. And it was a short speech in Parliament by Gerard Batten. So let me go to that for just 1 minute.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Commission have recently replied to my written question confirming that Commissioners Almunia and Crowes attended the Bilderberg meeting in St. Moritz in June. The Commission cannot tell me details of what was discussed, but assure me that the Bilderberg meetings do not take decisions. If Bilderberg meetings are just talking shops, why do the most important and powerful figures from around the world, including George Osborne, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, bother to attend? And what other summit of world leaders in politics, finance and business would go completely unreported in the mainstream media, such as the BBC? It is impossible not to reach the conclusion that the non-reporting of these events is anything other than a conspiracy between the organisers and the media. It merely confirms the belief of many that the hidden agenda and purpose of the Bilderberg Group is to bring about undemocratic world government. It's a disgrace that the European Commission is colluding in that.
I know it's not. I thought that was interesting. So we know that they're all colluded. Here's another, this is one more that I wanted to read tonight, that we may or may not know about. I don't know if many people do know about it. This was reported today. called a European bank run has begun. The European collapse roundup number six. This is through the infant status. This is the collapse roundup number six. The European bank run has begun. This is what a collapsing global Ponzi banking system looks like. Here's a roundup of recent news reports on the collapse of global Ponzi banking system. The European bank run has begun, and it's just a matter of time before the Federal Reserve primary dealer cartel partner in the U.S. go down with them. Thick as thieves. The global system, next time you come across someone still deluded enough to think that things will turn around economically, send them here. Stick this in your economic recovery propaganda pipe and smoke it. Global systemic risk near record highs prompt ASRB warning. We have been pointing to the incessant rise in risk of financial stability boards, most systematically important entities, for weeks now. It appears the European Systematic Risk Board has, according to Dow Jones, issued its first warning to governments, urging them to prepare capital injections for some European banks. And the ESRB urging them to prepare capital. Yeah, the ESRB urged governments to prepare capital injection for banks which failed to came close to failing the bank stress tests earlier this year. Europe remains marginally the weakest region for the perspective of financial risk, but we note how the Asian region was initially unharmed. But as 2011 has developed, and risk has spread contagiously into that region's financial system also. Global system crisis, fourth quarter of 2011. Implosive fusion.
Fuel
that will drive the reaction and turn it into real global shock is found in the United States since July 2011. We've only started on the process that led to this situation. The worst is ahead of us and very close. Thank God. And the next one here says that the European bank run, credit write-downs. The bottom line, this is a classic liquidity crisis now, not just for the sovereigns, but the banks in Euroland as well. I would consider this a bank run via the wholesale funding market. And it's not just the Anglo-American Wolfpack manipulating markets, but genuine concern of creditors about the solvency of their financial institutions. And the right thing to do is to accept the bitter pill and make substantially all of the credit write-downs at financial institutions quickly and recapitalize or nationalize the weakest banks. But remember, bank seizure can make the situation worse. And most headlines now show French bank run has started, and it's happening just as our research anticipated. Roughly 2 quarters ago, I warned subscribers that markets were overlooking a distinct concentration of risk in France. Interestingly enough, many believed France to be a stalwart alongside fellow ECB boss Germany, as one half of the strongest economic duo in Europe, in the European Union. Our take was that France's exposure to Italy and the other PIGS states through its highly leveraged and funding mismatched banking system was a house of cards waiting to happen. It also asserted that Italy was nowhere near as strong a credit as the media and the sell side had made it out to be. So there's a bank run in Europe, folks, and it's coming here to the United States. So I don't know what to tell you other than Bank of America may keep bankruptcy open for a countrywide. SEC investigating it, another magistrate. The hedge fund Magnetar is being investigated by the SEC. And French bank downgrade increased pressure of austerity. I'm going to ask you to go to this because it's, we're running out of time here. But there's a whole mess of good information here if you want to believe me. Banks all out war strategies to fight back against Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. System risk is higher than in systemic risk is higher than in 2008, believe it or not. So go to you can go to this. It's called AMPED Status, AMPEDSTATUS. All right, and AMPED Status, and you can check this out. And I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. We're just about running out of time, and we will, we got 16 seconds left. Join me tomorrow night when I have, introduce Dr. Fetterman. And he will be his book on psychedelics. And we'll have a great talk tomorrow night. 8 o'clock right here. Good night.